Welcome back to this week's Big Idea. Coming up, we are going to talk about the power of the growth mindset. We're going to talk about the power of language and the power of yet. And if you are not growing, you are dying. You're getting better. You're getting worse every single day. So choose to get better every single day.
All right, he's coming to you from Bowling Green, Kentucky, with 7 years of math teaching, 3 years at Challenge Day, tutoring all that time, a tremendous person, my best friend, and an excellent teacher, T-Free.
Hey-o! And you know he's coming from the beautiful PNW, sometimes soggy, Pacific Northwest, but he's got 11 years of teaching social studies at the middle school and high school level, as well as 20 years of that whistle around his neck, coaching my best bud and a tremendous person, K-Dub.
What up? All right, folks. Thank you for listening to Little Things Are Big Things Education, at hosted by Peak State Mathematics. Please do not forget to rate and review us. We are here for those 5 stars. We need them all. Give them those 5 stars. And we would love to hear from you at littlebiged.com, where you can review us and access some of the resources that we have made available to y'all. What is first for today, Timmy?
We're finishing up the growth mindset week here. So if you all didn't have a chance to dive in with us Tuesday, head back and listen to K-Dub's connection activity with student-led conferences. But we're gonna follow right along the line of that general vibe, and we're gonna start with some of that reflection, which I think is a critical element of those conferences you talked about. But we gotta know where we're at. So.
Yeah, I really love this metaphor that you were talking about. I'm a big fan of rhyming and alliteration. And so, like, I always said, like, right, you can't grow if you don't know is kind of the tagline I use with students with my dad humor. But I love yours about the maps and whatnot. You want to go into depth on, like, how you've connected maps to reflection?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's one of those things where, like, for me, like, I always need like a visual, cause I'm such a visual learner. And so I'm like, okay, we need to know where we're coming from. And a lot of times people are like, why am I reflecting? Right. And like, when I reflect back on some of my like teaching courses to become a teacher, I was like, hold on. I'm literally reflecting on my reflections at this point. Like, I remember that as part of the teacher program. Right.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm like, why is this important? Right. And so I'm like, oh, how many of us have ever opened up Google Maps, Waze, whatever platform you use, hopefully not MapQuest because you'll get lost. But, you know, like if you type in where you want to go and you just hit go, it asks you one more very important question. It says, what is your starting destination? Yeah. And if we don't know where we're starting, we cannot get directions to where we want to go. So, you know, the whole idea of like, you got to do reflections, you got to do some critical thinking, you got to figure out where am I, and like have a gut honest conversation or reflection, at least with yourself, about where you're at, what you're doing well, what you need to improve on, and where do you want to eventually go? And now let's build steps towards it. So.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things for me that has grown as I've gotten better at being reflective and better at teaching it to my students and my athletes as a skill is understanding that it's a constant thing, right? It's not a beginning and end thing. It's a, hey, like literally like with a student, okay, we're going to do 6 assignments on developing a historical argument, which is really evidence-based writing, right? So every time we do that, we should reflect on, okay, how did it go last time? How do I want to do better this time? And then how did I do immediately after that? And then when we do the next one, come back to that. And then with athletes, right, we hear about people talking about the process and practice all the time, but like literally every drill, right? Like reflecting on, okay, like what do I need to, what was my purpose here? What am I trying to get better at? And how can I use this time to make myself the best that I can be. So I think that's the biggest thing that I've grown on in my own journey of being reflective is understanding that it really is constant and you are really supposed to reflect on your reflecting.
Right. Yes. And I think for me, one of the things that took a while to understand too, is like the idea of like looking back on what I did poorly does not mean I'm like a bad person or a bad student or a bad teacher. Right. Like it honestly is just, that was where I was in that moment. Mm-hmm. And if I keep this growth mindset of like, I can do better, or I'm not there yet, or, you know, whatever the wording is on it. Mm-hmm. Like if I really truly believe I need to know where I'm at so I can continue to grow, because I believe this is just a moment in time along my journey. Like you said, it's this constant. I think that was a critical shift for me.
I'm so glad that you brought up that term yet. I don't know if this is necessarily the order that we want to go through the growth mindset conversation, but I think that the power of language is such a key part of having a growth mindset. And like, we literally, again, referring to Canyon Park, our illustrious alma mater, we had like posters that we started putting around the school where we just said the power of yet. And we had like, yet, like it looked like Superman's logo, like the diamond and colors and everything. And it was, I mean, it was something that we were really trying to get across to our students, but it was also a really great reminder for our teachers to see that right in the library where we had staff meetings. In every single major hallway, we had one of those posters that the students had created, that just like the power of yet. And it is really amazing how much it can impact your thinking to look at something that you haven't been successful at. And instead of saying I failed, just say I haven't succeeded yet. Right. And creating that, like the idea that the journey's not over, right? Like we're still working.
Absolutely. And I, in my own life, like this idea that I've struggled enough at this point in developing in so many spaces of my life that like I'm now like, when people are like, hey, how are you so confident in this? Or how did you like find this ability to keep going? I'm like, oh, 'cause I've always found a way. Like, I don't know how, but I just never quit. And I just kept this idea of, I'm not there yet, but let me try this next step. Or, you know, if that didn't work, let me try again. If this didn't work, then let me try again. Right. And like another one of those visual things, like we would never tell a child to stop trying to walk if they fell over the first couple times. Right. Like never have been like, guess you're not a walker. You're going to stay on, you know, stay in crawl mode for the rest of your life. But we're like, you're not there yet. Like, let me give you a little extra help. Let's keep going. Let's encourage it, you know. And, you know, if we kept that same mentality and same approach to other things in our life that we are like, we give this like permanence to, you know, it's like, oh, I'm never going to be good at math, or you know, like it's impossible for me to get this. Like, I can't ever do this, you know? And I think, again, talking about language, like it's so important to remove some of those absolutes from our language, because that power of yet is so real.
Absolutely. I think that a large part of that language around absolutes and then the difference of the version of using the power of the word yet is that for, like, if you think about for your students, right, we talked on a previous episode about like the ability to be able to make a mistake without having like a fear of like some like irreparable damage being done. And I think that is such a key in terms of like, as a teacher, how can you create a space where you're not just paying lip service to the idea of yet, but you are also like fostering an environment where yet is a part of what you're doing. And it's about like, let the kids run into walls. I mean, not like literally, but like figuratively, like let's run through some walls together and see what happens. Like I have just like, I have a pretty generic policy when we're doing any sort of project where I'm giving the kids some choice and some creative license. The kid comes to me and says, hey, K-Dub, I want to do my project on Moroccan independence movement. I want to present my information in a movie trailer. Like, we're going to make a fake movie about Moroccan independence, and we're going to do like a little trailer for it.
Nice.
I'm not going to say no, because that sounds hard and complicated and weird, and I don't know how to support you in that. I'm going to say yes, and this is another one, right? Like the yes and mentality as well, of like, yes, and let's figure out a way to do that, because I haven't done that yet, right? As a teacher, I haven't done that yet. And so like an example of that from this year, I did a student project where one kid really wanted to create a website about the topic that they were focused on. I don't know anything about creating a website. Like, our website is run by you because you know what you're doing. but this student, like, he even taught me a little bit about how to create one, because like him and I went through the process, like, let's figure this out. And, right. You like, you want kids to be able to take a risk, and cause that's where the growth happens. Right. And so I think if you add the yes and the power of yet together, you can create a community where that's possible.
I love that. Yeah. Language is critical for getting there. And I think one of the other things you were speaking on, and I love this, is like that idea of what does growth even look like, right? And how do we create that? And I think the big word that we were talking about back and forth was this idea of resilience. Mm-hmm. Right? And so I know for me, not having success immediately has always had me grow more, has taught me more than just having success right out the bat. I'm like, oh, sweet. Yeah, that was easy. And like, I never thought about it a second time versus like, for example, you just talked about the website, right? Like the first time I put together a website, like there wasn't click and drag, easy ad block stuff, right? It was, you know, you had to like know a little bit of coding. You had to, you know, be able to move some of these things. And if I wanted to make it any sort of custom and like fancy looking, like I needed to go to this site that had this, you know, pre-built code. And then I had to modify it slightly so that I was able to use it. And so like, I was not successful on the first try. And because I had to try it multiple times, and I didn't have like massive negative impact for failing the first few times, right? Like I kept trying. I ended up learning massive amounts. And now obviously with some of the click and drag build block stuff that, you know, even WordPress is using, like, yeah, it's much easier. And I can do some of the troubleshooting and the coding mm-hmm. stuff if I need to. So for me, I know it's not really been that straight line.
Well, yeah. And I think like, speaking of language again, and like what you talked about of like, you learn more when there's a struggle. I'm reminded of, I'm a big Malcolm Gladwell fan for the most part. And he's got this book. I think it's Outliers is the one he talks about it in. The problem with reading all of his books in a short time period is that they've all kind of mushed together in my head, but shout out to Malcolm Gladwell. I think it's the Outliers book. One of the things that he talks about is the disproportionate number of Fortune 500 owners who also have dyslexia, which like that spoke to me personally. And I'll talk a little bit about why in a moment, but or later on in the episode maybe. But the reason that he talked about that is like, he was talking about how like for some people with dyslexia, and obviously not everybody, right? Like it's obviously something that people need help with, and we need to provide supports and scaffolding for it. But like people who had dyslexia and then saw that as, he used the term desirable difficulty, and then that's language that I've adopted, right? Like it's a difficulty that has forced you to grow, to be more creative, right? To think differently, right? It's done something that has made you stronger rather than weaker, right? Like that old adage of what doesn't make you stronger, like, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger kind of idea.
Okay, Kelly.
so he's got that thought process to it, but right then you also have to acknowledge that some people will see those as insurmountable obstacles and they'll just kind of quit. And that's where I think that's the thing for the teacher, right? Like that's where our roles, that's why this podcast, right? Like that's why we're talking about this. We're not, I mean, we're going to talk about our own personal examples of this a lot today, I think, but I think in the classroom, right, like our job is to help kids see what looks like as an insurmountable obstacle as a desirable difficulty,
right?
Like yeah. That's like in defining our job. That's one way that I've defined it for myself. And so to get into the story, sorry to hog airtime here for so long, but like about how that can happen is, so I have a fairly minor form of dyslexia. It's not like a major hurdle. Like when I was first learning how to read, like they had, I don't know if they still do this. They had like these different colored plastic sheets that I would put over pages to try and help me with things, right? And like there was kind of a stigma attached to that, so I didn't really like using them. So I wasn't a very good reader for a very long time. And then I also have dyscalculia, right? Like I have all sorts of issues related to numbers in terms of just like, I will literally, if I'm not like consciously like making a note of it when I'm counting, I will skip. There's just like numbers that like don't process in my head for whatever reason. Like I, like, unless I'm really conscious about it, like eight, like just does not show up. Like I can't visualize it. So, I struggled a lot growing up in both math and reading. And then in, as it related to reading, two things happened to turn me into not just an okay reader, but like an like a reader who excels. Is number one, a teacher found a story that spoke to me. Redwall, Brian Jocks, like she was reading that out loud to the class when I moved into this class in fifth grade, when I first moved back actually to Bothell, when I first moved into the area where you and I would become friends. And like I wanted to know everything I could about that world. And so right. like I had to learn how to read because that was the only way to access the material that I wanted. Mm. And so like reading became this window into a world. I really love sci-fi and fantasy. So like it started out as just like it fed something for me. But then that same teacher and several other teachers after that like reinforced like you can do this if you want to.
Right.
And so I was able to become I'm not a fast reader because of the dyslexia, right? Like I still have to reread some things and it takes me a minute, but and I need quiet and all sorts of things like a lot of people do. But with my dyscalculia, I still don't like doing math. I will avoid math pretty much at all costs. You know this from personal experience. I will never do math, right? When we used to work in the fireworks stand together, I always was like, I wasn't even like, Dave, you could do that. I'm like, no, I'm not even going to try.
I'm going to be out stocking shelves and connecting with humans and making sales.
That's right. Cause well, and it was just like, I didn't even like, it was the avoidance strategy. Right. And like I had created my own negative self-talk around it. And part of that was not, I don't want to like out any teachers in public, but I had a string of like three teachers in a row that just told me like, you're not good at math. Like you're bad at math. Like, and there were these very fixed mindset thing. So instead of growth mindset, right, this very fixed mindset pattern that I fell into with math that for whatever reason I didn't really fall into with reading. And all I know is that I got two different approaches from the people in my educational experience related to those two obstacles. And one of them became something that actually allowed me to be a stronger reader. My comprehension, my annotation skills are all at a high level because I was forced to learn how to do those things if I wanted to be successful. And with math, like I quit. And right. I've quit on math since I was 14.
Well, and unfortunately, like you described, I think teachers allow that. I mean, I've never been that way, but I know teachers both from my personal experience when I was going through math, learning it as a high school student, middle school student, as well as some of my coworkers I've worked with. Like, it's such a big thing that we talk about this growth mindset to teachers to remind the teachers to have a growth mindset, because a lot of them are like, oh no, this is the only way to learn math, or oh no, like some of my students, they're just no good at it. We need to put them in the remedial math. They're never going to get it. They're too far behind. We can't really get them caught up. And I know some of them don't, I'd like to believe they don't believe that like the deepest level of their core, but like that's what shows up and that's what lands on these students. And you mm-hmm. do you get this permanent like scar that's like, oh, I'm no good at math. And mm-hmm. Then you compound that with a parent who maybe was told they were no good at math and then tells their son or daughter like, hey, I'm no good at math. You're probably no good at math. So just use photo math, get through the process. You don't really need to learn it because who needs it anyways, right? And it's, oh my gosh. Like I was literally today I was negotiating a car over the phone and the guy was like, wow, you really know your numbers. It was like, I teach high school math. I literally have a like car buying platform experience, in my classroom that I do. Like this is so important to me because like if I had just shown up and said yes to your sticker price, like I would have paid $3,000 more. Mm-hmm. I probably would have had it for worse financing terms. And then over the length of the car, $5,000-$10,000, who knows? Mm-hmm. But like, because I'm not adverse to math, like I'm able to go through that. I have the resilience. I can, have that conversation. And like, it blows my mind how like the conversations like we have with our students that sometimes we think are insignificant can have these massive lasting effects. So
I mean, like to your point, like the little conversations, like I remember like one teacher in particular, like total throwaway comment, but just like basically like, I'm not going to remember word for word, but basically like, yeah, you're not good at math. It's not a big deal. Like just like the idea that it was something that was fixed. And then I love that you brought up like the idea. I get this when I do parent night and teacher conferences, parent teacher conferences all the time. Like these parents that have this idea that being good at a particular subject is like some sort of hereditary trait.
Right.
And I mean, it is in the sense of, right, like you might have some, like, again, like just we know that dyslexia and things like that can be hereditary. And so it can create some obstacles that maybe are more like vision issues, right, might be hindrances. But also like the story becomes ingrained, right? Like if the parents don't feel confident in their reading skills, so they're not promoting reading at home, right? Like it's one of those things which connects me to, I think, another thing that is really, really important when we're talking about growth mindset versus fixed mindset and how it relates to students, and going back to the privilege walk that we talked about with the connection activity on Tuesday. I think one thing that we all have to bear in mind for our students and ourselves is that you keep using the word resilience. I think the word resilience and like being relentless, like I think of you, Tim, like I think of you as like a very relentless person. Like when I talk about your energy, that's part of what I'm getting at. It's just like a relentlessness. Like you're not going to accept something that hasn't been resolved yet.
I'd say most people in my life, including my wife, would agree I'm relentless.
I'm glad that you can self-identify with that. But the reason I bring that up is that I think for a lot of our students, I think one thing to remember is that their resilience or their relentlessness is going to look different for them, right? Like I was very lucky growing up, and I think you were too, in that our relentlessness was able to focus on the reading and the math or the being a football, like being an athlete or whatever, right? Like I didn't have to use, I like to use the idea of a metaphor. Like we all start the day out with so many pebbles of like resilience. And I didn't have to use any on whether or not I was going to have food or whether or not I knew how I was going to get to school or whether or not I was going to be dressed warm or have to worry about the way that I looked from a clothing standpoint or, you know, being bathed and all those things. And so I think there's a ton of things that our students show up with in the classroom that we all need to remember. They're using some of their resiliency on just showing up and being in the classroom.
Right.
And so I think when we're talking about growth mindset, one of the things that we need to be very careful of avoiding, I know I run into this with some of my colleagues who are very well-intentioned and really care about their students, is that it's kind of like that pick yourself up by the bootstraps mentality. And that's not what we're talking about here, right? We're not talking about like, oh, everybody can be a millionaire if you just work hard enough and have the right idea. That's bullshit. Like what is true though, is that we can all be successful in some way, shape or form. We can all grow in some way, shape or form, but we're starting from different places and our journeys are going to look different from one person to the next.
Right. And I'm going to challenge you and push your growth mindset for a moment. You think we can all be millionaires. I do think you're literally one idea away from making it happen. Cause I think just like you and I with this podcast, like the whole intention of this, right, is we want to provide our story because we think there's value in it and we think it's going to better the masses. Mm-hmm. Like that's why we share our story, right? Like I think a life worth living is a life worth sharing, right? Like tell your story and like each one teach, one lift, right? And as a mathematician, right? Like I believe in the power of numbers. I believe in the power of massive contribution, right? And I think that if we provide enough value to enough people, let's say our population, you know, we all of a sudden we're being followed by a million people, which is what, 1/3% of the people in this country alone. If every one of those million people threw us $1, we would be a $1 million business, right? Mm. And like to me, like $1 million is actually kind of a small number. Like, and it's because of my frame of reference, right? Like, yeah. It's crazy. And I think that goes back to the hereditary thing too that you talked about. And then it just back to back with some of the stuff we talk about with the maps, right? Like, Hereditary, if I don't like math, I'm not going to go out of my way to buy flashcards and work on math with my you know, child. Or if I don't like reading, or like I've had struggle and there's like this massive like pain attached to that experience, I may not read out loud nighttime stories to my child and encourage them to read. And so because of that hereditary thing, right, like this family tradition almost, we're starting at a much different space, which is what you're talking about, and those pebbles of resilience and relentlessness. And now when we talk about that map and that final destination, each of us has different directions to get to where we want to go because of those different starting points and because of those beliefs that are ingrained for a whole bunch of different reasons. So I think we all have the opportunity and ability to get there. And I 100% agree that it's not the same pathway, and it can take a lot more time, effort, energy, and support for us to get to where we want to be.
Yeah, I think, I mean, so I should have, you know, you talk about not speaking in absolutes. So thank you for kind of calling me out on that. I would say, right, like as the system currently functions, right, it's just not something, like you said, right, like there are people who are at such a disadvantage where the system is actually set up against them that they're not going to be able to achieve those things. But if it was something that we decided was important, yes, everybody could. If we actually had equality of opportunity, we could get there. So I appreciate you making that point. And that kind of leads me into one of the other things that I always like doing with growth mindset. And I think it's essential with our students today. And we've kind of touched on this in a couple of the other podcasts, like the idea that what our students are, like the hand that they've been dealt, it's not better or worse. It's just different, right? It's not, right. It's not about like kids these days, right? It's just acknowledging, hey, things are different. And one of the things that I think is different for our kids is that social media has reinforced something that I think a lot of people already believed anyways, which is this idea that growth is just a straight line, right? Like I think we've all seen this image somewhere. I think you even found a copy of it, right? This idea that growth is just this straight line where it's like, this is where I started, this is where I ended up, and it was just this constant thing that took place over time, which we know is not true, right? Like we know that it's this meandering journey where you're going to backslide, you're going to circle all the way back, you're going to have down times. And so like, to me, I think as you're talking with your students about growth mindset, as you're acknowledging that they're all starting from a different place, I think you also need to be really upfront with them about the fact that like, look, you're not going to go, I'll use a sports metaphor, right? You're not going to like go from having a 3 rep max on a back squat on the first time that you started lifting weights when you were a 9th grader to having the record for the school for your weight class when you're a senior. That's not going to be a straight line. Like that's just not going to, you're not going to see progress every single day, right? That journey is going to involve times where you try to get a new PR and it doesn't work. And guess what? Like this is something I talk to my football players about. The time that someone tries to like videotape themselves getting a new squat max and then they post it to social media, guess what? The time that someone failed trying to do that, that does not make it on Twitter, right? That image is not out there for you, right? We as a society hide our failures a lot of times, or at the bare minimum, we don't advertise them the way we advertise our success in social media. And so I think it's really important to be upfront with the students. Like there are going to be times when you're going to go backwards or when you're going to stall out. And sometimes it's going to be completely out of your control, right? Like, you did everything right, but you tore an ACL. Well, now we got to go back and kind of restart from scratch almost sometimes. Or, you know, you were doing really well in school and then you got forced into comprehensive distance learning and your home doesn't have access to consistent and reliable Wi-Fi. And so you're not able to get and access the scaffolds and supports that you were getting in person. And now your skills are not growing at the same rate or even deteriorating because you're not getting the practice that you need, right? That's completely out of your control. But that doesn't mean that you quit. It just means that like, and that's where, again, I think that's where our job as teachers comes in, is to make sure that kids don't give up on themselves and to show them the steps to continue in the process.
Right. And I think that almost shows up in a way that we can model as well. And I know we've talked about modeling, because you're so right with social media and, really most stories that we hear, like by the time we hear of somebody, we're like, oh my gosh, like I can't, where'd they even come from? Right. And this like overnight success, you forget that it's like, no, it took me 6 years to become an overnight success. It is one of those things where I think if we as teachers can show that we are still learning, that we are still growing, we can be transparent in the idea that like, no, I was really, really good at this. And then like, I got smacked because this thing showed up or something happened in my world. Mm-hmm. And I took a couple steps back, regathered my thoughts, my processes, took a new approach to it because what used to always work for me was not working anymore. Mm-hmm. And so like I needed this new approach to actually connect with my students this year in an NTI learning. Like I know that this and this always works, right? And again, that power of absolutes. So I'm like, oh, it always works. Damn, I got knocked right off course, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it took me a lot of time to figure out, wait, how do I still connect with these students? Because it's October and I still don't know all of their names, and that drove me nuts, right? Because I hadn't seen these students in person because I had 45 of them on my roster in this virtual learning platform where only 22 of them were showing up on a regular basis. And I'm like, and kids are coming in and out, and like it was driving me nuts. And like I had to remind myself that that was part of my learning journey, and mm-hmm. I was all over the place before I could finally grow to where I'm at in this moment. And it's not an overnight success. And I remind my students like, hey, whatever happened in first semester, that was just part of our journey. We took some steps back. We might've accelerated a bit. We might've coasted a little bit. And I know we were talking about it with just like the snowstorm this week and how you've only had your students for a couple of weeks. And then all of a sudden they had like almost a week of school that was off without required meets. And I know for me, like we're almost back to in-person and all of a sudden, like we're supposed to take a test on Monday and Tuesday and we haven't been in class. And so we're not doing required meets. We're just reviewing and we might show up tomorrow and who knows, right? And so I don't know. It's just that success journey and trying to combat the perfectionism and we only show the good and the overnight success and we celebrate success without honoring the struggle to get there.
Yeah. And I think like the fact that you brought up the journey, like again, talking about the language that we use, like it's not an accident, whether it's in sports, and that's, you know, that's outside of academia, right? That's obviously one of my primary interests, but you know, I like fantasy stories, right? Like I'll use Harry Potter as an example, right? Like he didn't just learn how to do magic and defeat right. Voldemort, right? Like that, like there's a reason there's 7 books, man. Like it takes some time to figure things out. And like part of like even what he's learning in that story is that it's about the journey. And I think it's not an accident that a lot of the successful people that you hear from, they talk about process, which is another word for journey. Mm-hmm. All the time. And if you become results driven or results focused, you might have a success, but you will not have sustained success. Right. And so I think that's another reason that growth mindset is so important. As you talk about the idea of a journey, is that like, if your goal is to win a Super Bowl, you will never be Tom Brady, who I don't really like, but the man's been to 10 and won 7. Like he is successful. And part of it is as simple as his own self-talk, which he gives to all of us. Every time they ask him what his favorite Super Bowl victory was, he says the next one.
Woo!
Right? Like, that's just, like, that is a perfect example of, like, you have to convince yourself and get into a mindset where, like, it's about what's next. It's not about what you've already done and not about, like, just trying to do it once, right? It's about trying to sustain it. I think the journey is really important to that. And I think both of us have good stories about that, but I feel like you have a couple of really good stories about kind of your journey in education, because you've had a really interesting kind of journey through your process as a teacher. So
I've come in and out a couple times.
All right, folks, thanks again for listening. We're going to interrupt Tim here for a short reminder that if you are interested in accessing any of the materials in our Teacher Vault, this week we added some supports and scaffolding for student-led conferences, which was the topic of our Connections episode. That is available on littlebiged.com or via the Peak State Mathematics website. Tim, anywhere else they can find that information?
You know, we want to continue to encourage you to follow us on our YouTube channel so you can keep it up to date all the time, as well as Facebook. Feel free to interact with us. And again, yeah, you've got free resources available as well as joining our paid membership site for all of those classroom activities and things that we are sharing on a deeper level there, as well as our live monthly.
Awesome. Again, don't forget to rate and review us. Thanks for listening. And let's go ahead and get back to hearing about Tim's first year as a teacher.
I love one of my first experiences of truly teaching in the classroom, because I went into it very coachable. I took the I don't know what I'm doing approach to like a different level than I even realized at the time, and like almost accidentally through that, like created tremendous amounts of connections with a lot of people in my building, including, you know, my fellow teachers, my principal, my students, the parents. Like all of it was there because I tried new things. If it worked, we did more of it. And if it didn't work, we acknowledged it, reflected, and made positive change. Right. And, I remember wanting to be successful, and like, so I had that desire, because that's just, you know, we're competitive. And like, I remember not knowing how to do it and being okay with that. Which I don't know where I learned that from, like what that turned, like where that really got developed initially, but, it's something I try to instill in my students now, is like the being okay with not being okay, and like not needing to know the answer in this moment, but trusting I've always somehow figured it out, so I'm going to be able to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And so for me, that's a part of that resiliency and my relentlessness, is like, I don't know it yet, and I'm going to figure it out because I've always figured it out. And if I don't figure it out today, I'll try again tomorrow. And, you know, eventually I'll find something that works, or I'll find a better fit, you know. And, you know, every once in a while, like I do need to completely change paths for a bit, but then use that next step. And that's part of that zigzaggy journey on my total life growth thing. But like being willing to listen to my co-teachers that first year and be like, okay, you know how to teach Algebra 1. You know how to teach Math 8 to these chaotic human beings, right? Like, what can I pull from that? And then what can I do to connect even deeper? And then like talking to my principal, it's like when I was coaching, it was the first year I'd actually coached, women's sports. And, she gave me this book, like the coach her like a man or something like that, I think is what it was called. But it was this idea of like, you know, we're different, and like, you don't have to treat us like we're fragile, kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. It was just like this, like being open to that, and like, yeah, I don't really know what I'm doing yet, and I'm a dude. So like, obviously there's a ton of growth opportunity for me, and like soaking in all those little bits and pieces and listening and reflecting and having the students tell me what works and what doesn't work, and getting them up on the board and trying and failing and sharing what I learned on a daily basis and putting excitement around learning, really did build that like ideal learning atmosphere for me that first year of teaching. And like it ended up resulting in a student voted Teacher of the Year award for me. And like, I was shocked, because like you said, we're a little more critical to ourselves than a lot of times we're actually performing. And I was like, you know, I'm a first year teacher. I have no idea what I'm talking about. But because I believed I didn't know what I was talking about, and it led me to wanting to understand and just being so open to that growth mindset, and I don't know it yet. By the time I got to the end of the school year, like I was my student's favorite aspect of middle school. And they're like, we want you to move to the high school with us, which I eventually ended up doing. That's a different story. And that turns into, you know, more growth. Yeah. But like, had I just jumped in and been like, oh, I know math, I'm good at math. And like, I can teach because, you know, I've coached, right? If I just like, this is who I am, this is how I'll be, there's no way I would have developed as a teacher. And there's no way I would have ever gotten that award. So,
well, and one of the things that you mentioned earlier that I thought was something that I that stood out to me, even in the moment, thinking back on when you got the award, was that you didn't take that as the, I won the Super Bowl, I don't have to do anything, right? Like, I've arrived. You treated it as a, like, a proof of concept, right? Like, doing it this way works. So I'm going to keep having a growth mindset. I'm going to keep asking for help from people. I'm going to keep getting student impact or student feedback. I think, again, speaks to like the idea of growth mindset, right? Is like, you don't use the awards as a reason to stop. You use them as a reason to keep going. And I saw that with you in a way that was really impressive. So,
right. And I mean, that lands with, you know, a couple of my true honest beliefs that has created this growth mindset for me long term is if you're not growing, you're dying. Like, everything in this world either grows or dies. And if we're not fostering a space to help it grow, or we believe we cannot grow, we will eventually die. So, you know, I've taken on the mindset of I will learn something new every single day. I like to share with my students what it is that I learned because I like to celebrate learning, because I think that modeling helps them along the way. And then this, I'm going to go shout out to Coach Banner on this one as well. I remember him always saying, like, you never stay the same. You either get better or you get worse. And he talked about it in a relativity thing, right? Because if my opponent is putting in the work that I'm not willing to put in, they're getting better. And in a relative state, I have lowered, like, in comparison. And so he's like, you never stay the same. You get better or you get worse. So get better every day. And I know that's been something that has driven me. And for me, just on a social emotional, like, growth piece for me, like, I had to recognize it was okay to celebrate my victories. And I was pretty freaking awesome at moments. Right. But like, I also needed to know that I can take that awesomeness and get better next time. And so, like, I do want to speak to both of those, because I, for a long time, was never, ever satisfied. And I was like, oh, okay, cool, what's next, right? And I would never actually, like, take the moment to be like, holy crap, like, I worked my tail off for a year and a half to make that one moment happen. And I just brushed it off like, of course it happened. That was what I expected. Move on, you know? And so I want to honor those of us that do work our tails off and are growing, like, take a moment and celebrate you. Like, celebrate your students, celebrate yourself, and never settle. Because the moment that we give up on growth is the moment that we fall behind. And, you know, I think we just have a lot of opportunity to grow.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect story to end things with. I don't really want to interrupt anything that you just talked about. So I'm just going to give you a round of applause visually here for those of you who can't see me. And just say that, you know, it's not surprising to me when you're successful, but at the same time, I'm glad that you've learned to stop and appreciate it when you do succeed.
Appreciate it. Well, always learn in that peak state where you're at a higher level so you can soak it up.
Absolutely. That's how you make it a great day.
Absolutely. All right. See y'all next week. Thank you for joining us.